Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Matt Robeson, Beyond Politics. And this week, politics has been kind of amazing because there's been such a strange mix of ultra-serious issues filled with moments that are just hilarious. Paul and Alicia and I talked about the latest developments in the Trump trial and how Donald Trump's own lawyer ended up introducing some really humiliating evidence about him. And we touched on the crackdown on student protesters around the country and how as soon as some of them started to kind of humiliate themselves, Lauren Boebert came along and seemed to say, "Hold my beer." And then, of course, we had to talk about the most bizarre story of political self-destruction that any of us have ever seen. And it happened to a prominent Republican this week. And that's all before we got to our actual usual closing lighter segment at the end. And this one definitely had us going out on a high note. Look, we pride ourselves on this show in diving in a lot deeper than most of the political analysis out there. But this week, we got to do that and have some fun at the same time. So let's start with that Trump trial and what you might hear as a call for odor in the court. All right, Paul, we got to start where we started last week with This Week in Trump. Once again, leaning on you and your experience as a prosecutor, walk us through what you've seen in the last week. How effective has it been for the prosecution? Has the defense managed to defense? I'm pronouncing it like we're in the NBA playoffs.
Defense.
Has the defense, boy, I'm going back to my foghorn leghorn. Prosecutor, will you tell me how the defense has been doing? Okay. Just walk us through what's been going on and how have you seen it from a prosecutor's standpoint?
Okay, so I'll talk about two things. One, the trial, and two, the gag order. So first, in terms of the trial, the prosecution has been building its case sort of from the ground up. We haven't yet seen sort of the big celebrity witnesses, but we are putting into place pieces of the puzzle that are essential, and the prosecution is going to connect them all later. Because remember, in order to make this a felony, this case has to be about election interference, not merely falsifying the business records, but falsifying the business records in order to promote or prevent something with an election. So the most important testimony has been David Pecker so far, in my view. And David Pecker basically lays out the scheme for catch and kill, to catch the stories, hide the stories. And he testifies that from what he saw, heard, and was part of, it had nothing to do with Trump's worrying about his family, but only worrying about the election. This is kind of a horse's mouthpiece that puts a very important element of the case now already in evidence, that at least from this witness who was part of this deal, it's all about the election. That's what Trump is worrying about. And Pecker does not come off as antagonistic to Trump. He comes off as simply telling it like it is. And that's also very important because the defense can't say, oh, look, here's a guy who hates Donald, and therefore he's making up these stories. So I think Pecker is a very important witness and a good way to sort of get the jury rolling. And according to observers in the courtroom, the jury was listening very closely to Pecker's testimony. There was also some sort of foundation testimony that was kind of boring, but important to tie things together. All in all, the prosecution seems to be doing just fine so far, kind of at the beginning of this case. So that's the trial. Now, in terms of the gag order,
you actually texted me an opinion that is very counterintuitive, that despite the fact that he's just been awarded an additional $1.8 billion worth of Trump Media stock, which increases his ill-gotten gains from his stupid Truth Social company. What a scam in plain sight. But anyway, you said that a potential $9,000 fine is still a big deal. That's very counterintuitive. Right. Why? So
here's why. Trump has never faced a criminal trial, number one. Number two, he's never been charged in a criminal trial with contempt of court. So this is unprecedented, as the overuse of that word, but it's unprecedented. What the judge did was he fined him the statutory maximum for nine violations, $9,000. But more importantly, what the judge said was, you're looking at jail time if you keep this up. That's what the judge said. That is the most important part of the order, not the $9,000. So it's a big deal. The judge has signaled to Trump, I am in charge, you are not, and you are in trouble, buddy. And that came before this morning's hearing. There was a hearing on two additional alleged violations of the gag order, which, to be fair, those alleged violations preceded the order of the $9,000. So it's not likely that those two violations, if found, are going to result in the imposition of jail time. But anything further could.
But can I cut to Alicia for a second, understanding sort of the Republican political mind here? Is this a strategy by Trump? I mean, would it be the best thing for him politically if he actually was sent to jail?
Oh, absolutely. And I think he wants to. I think he's trying. I think he hedged the last 24 hours after the ruling from the judge because he's debating how much he wants. And is he more afraid or is he more willing to own how good it would be for him and his narrative of being persecuted? I mean, he'd raise so much money if he were behind a jail cell. And I think people are talking about this. I think they're hoping for it. They want to prove that Merchant is somehow biased or corrupt and trying to take him off the campaign field, which ironically, other than today, all his days off, including over a three-day weekend recently, he didn't go on the campaign trail anyway. So all this complaint of they're keeping me off the campaign trail, he's not campaigning on the days off. It's just a lie. But can I note my favorite part of the trial so far was a little known witness on Friday that was called, and he was the C-SPAN archivist who had to come in to authenticate video because Team Trump wouldn't, whatever the legal term is, wouldn't just agree that it's real.
Stipulation.
Thank you. Stipulation. So since they wouldn't just stipulate that it's a real tape,
stipulate to that.
The C-SPAN came in to authenticate it. And here's the fun part. The judge in the case would not allow these accusations of other women to be brought forward in the trial because it would be too prejudicial. But what the prosecution did and was allowed to, and the other side didn't even object, is the video clip they chose to use is of him talking of the accusations from other women. And I just got the biggest kick out of that. I thought, A, that was very smart and clever from the prosecutor. And B, if they had just stipulated, that video would never have been shown.
Hey, speaking of things that are highly stipulating, can I see your self-admission and raise you a shits and pants? As I promised in the intro, every single story that we're going to do today has the sacred and the profane. It has the deadly serious and the extraordinarily hilarious all wrapped in one. So here is the Trump trial version of that. This morning, we're recording on Thursday, Todd Blanche, Trump's attorney, who's surprisingly competent and sane, had to defend his client against the imposition of further penalties from the judge and the gag order by reading several of Michael Cohen's social media posts about Trump in furtherance of his argument that this is just Donald Trump executing his First Amendment right to protect himself against political attacks. He's saying Michael Cohen is making all these horrible, very political attacks. So he had to read out Michael Cohen's post where he said he wouldn't. Donald Trump was mean because he wouldn't put any money into Michael Cohen's prison commissary. And then he read the one where he referred to Donald Trump as Von Shits and Pants, which resulted in laughter from the audience in the courtroom. Yeah, no shits and pants. Of course it did.
It's really interesting. Smart lawyers, by the way, know that often stipulating to certain facts can save them from embarrassing revelations. In this case, as Alicia pointed out, the refusal of the defense, we're not going to stipulate to nothing, meant that they got shat upon in the courtroom by a slightly clever prosecutor who brought in the archivist to say what should have been stipulated to. It's tough lawyers. Their client has said, don't stipulate to anything.
Apparently, the audience in the courtroom has been treated. We're not allowed to talk about this because it's considered rude and picking on old people. No, we're talking about Donald Trump here. We can say whatever we want. Apparently, he's been falling asleep, which, I mean, gosh darn it, you're on trial for your freedom. The amount of contempt, talk about contempt of court, the amount of contempt you have for all of us. There was this sign that someone erected in Lincoln Plaza in New York City saying, New York hates Donald Trump. Isn't that backwards? Donald Trump hates New York. Donald Trump hates all of us. He hates his supporters. He hates that he is supposedly a populist movement made up of working people.
Mutual emotion. Yeah. In New York in particular.
He hates these people. He looks down on them and he has contempt for them. And he has contempt for the judicial system. And he has contempt for democracy. And he has contempt for all of us. And he's showing it by falling asleep in court. And then the ultimate insult to injury, or maybe it's injury to insult, is he's apparently loudly farting. In the courtroom.
They're saying he's tooting. Yeah, and that's what wakes him up.
So the mixture of the very serious and the extraordinarily hilarious. Speaking of which, back to serious, not to give people mental whiplash for a second, but Michael Luttig, the noted conservative judge who very nearly was on the Supreme Court, gosh, given how clear-eyed and smart he seems to be, I really would have taken that these days. I really would. Said after the Supreme Court hearing in which they seemed ready to give some form of immunity to presidents, including Donald Trump, for their actions, which strikes me as insane. He said, quote, I'm profoundly disturbed about the apparent direction of the court. I now believe that it is unlikely Trump will ever be tried for the crimes he committed in attempting to overturn the 2020 election. This strikes me as an even bigger deal and a really depressing one in the trials of Trump.
Let me give you a counter argument, a really quick one about the Supreme Court opinion.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
Oh, you won't stipulate that, will you?
I won't, because here's what's kind of interesting. I mean, okay, we're in unprecedented territory. I love that word. We've never had a criminal former president before. What if the Supreme Court is saying, if we ever face this again, because apparently in their arguments, they didn't really care about the current case. They were looking at the future. What if this in the future, we set a line that says if it's legitimately within his public duty as president, and there is a finding that it is within the legitimate public duty as president, there is immunity from prosecution for that going forward. If, however, there's a finding that it's outside his legitimate public duty as president, then there is no immunity after the presidency ends. So it raises all kinds of questions, but it's at least a legitimate question to ask. Is Trump exhorting his followers at the Ellipse before they riot part of his duty as president? You can at least ask the question. The questions they're asking are tough questions. I know why Luttig is concerned about the direction of the court. We all are, because we suspect they're going to try to find a way to let him off. But these questions in this situation are questions that can that you can think of fact patterns and ask them legitimately.
I listened to the Supreme Court hearing on that twice, and because some people were coming down on
you don't have a lot
sides.
To do in life, do you? I mean, you seem to have an awful lot of time.
I work a lot from home. I always have something planned. I got what Paul got out of this. I don't think they're going to give him immunity for crimes. I really don't. I think they are going to, and several of them mentioned it. What about in the future if? What about in the future if? And that came from liberal appointed and conservative appointed judges. I think they are going to somehow do exactly what Paul said, is split the baby and say you have zero immunity on things that you do in your official capacity. And maybe you have a level of immunity in things you do in your unofficial versus official. And I think that's what's going to do. Now, it will delay it, because then that's going to kick it back to a lower court to decide which, if any, of the charges he's charged with are part of an official duty that he is immune being prosecuted for. So I think it will delay it, but I don't foresee them giving him immunity.
The problem that I have here is the insane levels of hypocrisy on the part of right-wing jurists who have been shouting into our earballs for decades now that they're strict originalists, strict constructionists, strict whatever. Back in 2000, in the Bush v. Gore case, they recognized, hey, we need to act with alacrity. There are real profound consequences to us making decisions now that will affect the presidential election that's going on now. They seem to be saying, hey, you know what? This time around, we can chew on this. We can think about far-flung hypotheticals into the future. And if the practical effect, which they're smart, they're all smart enough to know that this is the case. If the practical effect is this is going to make any trial before the election impossible to hold, so be it. Despite the fact that deprives the American people of the ability to know before going into the ballot box or filling out their mail-in ballot, which according to Trump is an act of treason, I guess, it deprives them of the right to know whether one of the major candidates is a felon. And that's a decision that a jury of his peers should be making. And that's information that voters should have. The other piece of hypocrisy that drives me up the freaking wall is that for decades, those same strict constructionist, originalist, conservative types have been shouting us about a Supreme Court and liberal justices that seem to be inventing rights cut from whole cloth that are not found in the actual language of the Constitution. Their principal objection to Roe versus Wade was that in the original finding of Roe versus Wade, the court said that there was a penumbra, that means umbrella, apparently. That's on your word of the day list. There's a penumbra of rights implied by the Bill of Rights, and that includes the right to privacy. That finding is what undergirded Roe versus Wade. And conservative jurists howled about that. They said, you can't invent, you can't find, you can't derive rights. It's either written in the Constitution or it's not. And now you have this right of presidential immunity that has been invented, cut from cold cloth. It is not in the Constitution that they seem to be on the verge of inventing. And it's extraordinarily hypocritical. And it just leads me to the conclusion that they have absolutely no legal, moral, or logical rudder guiding them, that they are acting out of pure political animus. That's their driving force. And it drives me crazy. I could live with
I think pure political animus would be deriding a Supreme Court who hasn't even handed down a ruling yet.
I'm willing to hold in abeyance. I am willing to hold in abeyance, but it does seem very likely, based on their questioning, that they are going to find some level of presidential immunity. And Paul, I hear you a lot more about lawyering than I do, but I just want to note the hypocrisy here that if they arrived at such a conclusion, it would be on the basis of them deriving and inventing things that are within the penumbra of what's actually written in the Constitution. And that is speaking out of both ends of your something. All right, let's move on. I can't believe it's like history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And we are going to rhyme with ourselves from last week. We talked about the campus protests. things happened in the last week. UCLA was cleared out rather aggressively by police. Ditto Columbia. We're seeing more clashes, more aggressive actions.
UNH?
University presidents. Yeah, UNH, right in your old stamping grounds and your current stamping grounds there, Alicia. So I guess I'll just throw out. And yes, there is a funny aspect to this. We will get to that.
It's
stamping.
No, it's stomping.
No,
it's stomping.
No,
I'm on
no.
Team stomping.
Team stomp.
Okay.
Team stomp.
You can say that is the common usage. It's also not the correct word, but that's okay.
Really? Okay. Let me just. Okay. You keep.
You
chomping.
Also say chomping right, at talk. The bit, don't you? You say chomping at the bit as if chomping is a thing.
It is champing.
It is champing. It's also stamping.
Can I, while you guys are Googling?
Okay. Up until about 20 or 30 years
don't
ago,
Google yourself.
Stamping ground had ruled the roost overwhelmingly. But since the 1990s, stomping has been stomping all over its rival.
You know what that comes from? The same dictionary people who decided that you could now use the word literally to mean figuratively. They can go Google themselves, too. All right. Sorry. Paul.
All right. You go
campus
focus
protest.
On medieval.
No, Alicia, campus protest. Paul said his bit. You go.
I guarantee something about these campus protests. I could write 5 questions at a 4th grade level, and 99 out of 100 of these elite students at our elite campuses could not answer them, would not pass if it was about what is actually happening between Israel and Gaza and the Palestinians. I guarantee it. 99 out of 100 of them would fail a 4th grade level 5 question quiz on what's going on over there. And yet they're throwing stuff at police. They're occupying buildings. They're embarrassing themselves. Can you imagine being, I got a kid in college. Can you imagine being a parent and turning on the news and seeing your kids screaming like a goat at police about something they know nothing about?
Oh, don't invoke goats. We're going to get to goats shortly. Alicia, share with people the New York Post item. I mean, look, the New York Post is basically like the New York Times being summarized by a crackhead. I don't advise reading the New York Post, but on this item, it's worth it. Well, tell people about that New York Post item that you saw.
New York Post has the best covers anywhere every day. But this wasn't actually a New York Post item. They picked up on it afterward. This just went viral. And then everyone wrote about it. It is a funny video. Everyone has to look it up. One of the occupiers of Hamilton Hall at Columbia, who is no longer occupied there, came out and spoke to the press in a gaggle because they're hungry and they want water and food. And so they said to the members of the press that Columbia needs to provide those paid for a meal plan with food. Now, they can always go down to the cafeteria and get it, but no, they were busy illegally occupying a building about a topic they know nothing for and wanted Columbia to bring them food. But it gets better because the reporters weren't biting. And so they pushed back a little and said, you want them to bring you food? No one's saying they have to bring us food. You just said they have to bring you food. She said, no, we just want to be able to have food delivered. Has anyone stopped you from delivering food? No, not yet. But we want assurances that they won't stop them from delivering it. And then one reporter goes, sounds like you're trying to be a revolutionary, but you want someone to bring you some food and water while you're doing it. And it is just a funny video. It is the perfect example of who these protesters are. And by the way, this one's a PhD student. So she was teaching other students, which is really terrifying. But for future protesters, I text the video to my 19-year-old who's in college to see what her response was. And she was like, they want to hold a rebellion and didn't think to pack a sandwich?
I only will eat wood oven fired pizza. I only want Marzano tomatoes from Rome. And I want the real mozzarella. None of your fake stuff. I want it brought in now in a cardboard box that'll keep it warm while I'm protesting.
With a gluten-free crust.
Oh my gosh. I'm trying to restrain myself. I really am, because I understand that there are amongst these like outrages against sanity, there are young people who feel passionately about something that is an underlying real issue. There is real death and destruction happening in Gaza. And if what young people are saying is, we badly want that to stop, we care about that situation, respect that. I agree with you, but it is just hard when you see these people going over the line into violence, anti-Semitism, destructiveness, stepping on their own rakes constantly and beclowning themselves with stuff like this. But can we introduce the humor element into this one? I tweeted about it. So if you go to Twitter, which you never should, it should be blocked on whatever browser you
use. It is the death of society.
It is. But if you're going to, follow me at Matt L. Robeson, where I retweeted maybe the greatest, I don't know, it might have redeemed all of Twitter. This is maybe the greatest video. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. This was someone who captured Lauren Boebert's visit to the George Washington University campus, where she was trying to do a political stunt, walking amidst the Gaza protesters and sort of hoping that cameras would follow and like help her because she may not even win her own congressional race. It's a long story. So first, the protester greeted her by chanting Beetlejuice. Alert listeners may remember that she was kicked out of a production of Beetlejuice in her hometown of Denver because she was vaping, dancing, blowing smoke
into the
mouth of a pregnant woman. Yes, committing public acts of lechery and so forth. And then in the totally dignified manner that we associate with her, she flicked off the staff as they booted her from the theater. Yes, the students just chanted Beetlejuice at her, which was delicious. But then she tried to go to a pro-Palestinian poster and rip it down. Apparently, she hasn't been doing as many pull-ups as Marjorie Taylor Greene because she lacks tricep and bicep strength. She tried both. She tried both the bicep pull down and the arm extension. So she used both oppositional sets of muscles, but the poster seemed to be adhered too strongly for her. So she walked away in frustration. Highly recommend. It's worth visiting X for that.
I want to know, while it is funny, anything to do with Lauren Boebert is generally just hilarious, but I am in agreement with her that some of these pro-Palestinian signs are actually anti-Israeli, anti-Jew, and anti-Semitic, and I think they should all be torn down. But she's a United States congressman. What is she doing going and touching someone's private property to begin with?
Lauren Boebert.
Yeah, it's Lauren Boebert.
I just think it's, I know, I'm going to say inappropriate and then talk about Lauren Boebert. Okay, point made.
Listen, I mean, I have a video about this on the Blue Amp channel. I couldn't help myself. I couldn't help myself. I mean, the Secret Service had to separate her from Donald Trump because she was too aggressively trying to grope him and take selfies with him. It was so gross.
You sure it wasn't the other way around?
No, I'm pretty, like, Trump had to actually say, like, this is getting a little too handsy even for me. And so this is like, this is where we're at. This is Lauren Boebert. And anyway, mazel tov, Alicia.
You're Lauren
Boebert,
if you're Lauren Boebert, you could just grab him by the...
Have you not seen this? Watch my videos, people. Someone caught on video Marjorie Taylor Greene addressing a Republican meeting, and there was a cardboard cutout of Donald Trump, and she started fondling the nether regions.
Oh my God. Are you serious?
Which is what she calls the Netherlands. But yes, she started... You people do not watch my videos.
Not the uplands. Right. It's like, the Netherlands.
Yeah, it's like, did you meet the ambassador from the Nether regions? She tried to, I'll tell you that much. Okay, let's move on. We have got to talk about another story that mixes the sacred, the profane. We're going to bring out a humor element in this, even though it's a gruesome, it's a horrible thing. I've never seen a politician destroy their career as quickly as South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem this past week. I'm baffled. My flabbers are gasted. She voluntarily, in her memoir, autobiography, something, she voluntarily told a story about how she shot a puppy for no reason, for being a puppy. And also, to add to it, since you called out goats before, Alicia, she shot a goat because it smelled bad, unlike other barnyard animals. What the hell? Why would you do this?
As a dog person, I'm so disgusted by this story. The funny part is that she told it. But what's worse, that you shot a dog for playing and not being a good hunting dog who wasn't trained yet to be a hunting dog and then ate some chickens because you had the dog off the leash and out of a cage in someone else's yard. My little poodle, who's almost 16, chases and eats bunnies. It's what dogs do. And they're wild bunnies. They're not someone's
person. I know what to do with that poodle.
And so she shoots the dog in a gravel pit. He's 14 months old, by the way. His name is Cricket, and he's so cute. He's 14 months old. He's a little long wire-haired pointer. And then in the same book, in the same area of the book, she tells how a goat who smelled, this one she got more specific, she dragged it, and I quote, dragged it to the gravel pit, and she shot it, but it didn't die, so she had to shoot it multiple times. She is a horrible person. Now, is she explaining herself? No, she's doubling down. She's tripling down. All the criticism. She actually went on to Twitter to note, it happens. Just a couple weeks ago, I killed 3 horses. Now, I have a question. I know.
Does this legally, Paul, you're a prosecutor. Does this count as a spree? Is that?
I don't know what this is. This is a rant.
This is someone stop her before she kills again.
Sometimes you have to put horses down. But why three at once? Did they smell? Did they eat a chicken? I think someone should get one of those ground perpetrating radar and see just how many carcasses are under there. Because she is now, she went on Sean Hannity last night. She is framing all of this as a demonstration of how tough she is.
The alleged ground perpetrator.
The alleged... You killed a puppy. How are you tough?
She is a ground perpetrator. But look, I think she's speaking to a constituency which is maybe not familiar with those of us here on the elite East Coast, but in the hinterlands or the Netherlands, as we may say, of America, out there in Montana, Wyoming, in the Dakotas, where wild men roam free and have
their... You know everything you know about that region from watching Yellowstone. Be honest.
No, I just read a book. I just read a book by C.J. Box about a Montana, Wyoming game warden named C.J. Pickett that is long on guns and people who carry them and what they think about them, and everybody has them. And so for us, effete New Englanders to comment on the true American culture of if one gun is good, many guns are a lot better, and too many guns are enough. It's so hypocritical.
I don't know what cricket has to do with the gun issue.
Noam has done a great service to America by making sure that we understand that animals who don't behave just don't get to stay. That's the kind of culture we want in the White House. That's the kind of culture we want as Vice President of the United States. That's the kind of culture we want to share around the world.
I think she's done a great job for society by guaranteeing she's not VP, because the Trumpiest of Trumpers are whacking her on this. No pun intended. The Trumpiest of Trumpers are like, you're out, Noam. You're out.
Actually, your analysis is the best ones I've heard so far, Alicia, where it's like, wait, your theory was you were going to show you're tough because you managed to stand up to a puppy. That's really like, how freaking deranged is your thinking? And you know what? This book is ghostwritten. There's a whole human being who has a working set of neurons who heard this, whose job is to write your thoughts into expression, and who said, oh, this is gold. This is so great. I'd like to introduce our listeners, by the way, to Jonah Goldberg of The Dispatch, no liberal people, who gave a quote saying, Noam wants to be VP. Noam is close to Corey Lewandowski, who is a thuggish guy who thinks talking tough is a core part of MAGA and essential to impressing Trump. And that's essentially the reason she did this. She thought that this was as close as she could get to being a tough guy or gal, showing that she had shot a puppy and then a goat. This sounds like deranged Dr. Seuss.
Those who have said things like, let's not, like her, let's on a farm, you got to make tough decisions, they're working dogs. This isn't 1904, where to get rid of the dog, you either shoot it or get in a horse and buggy and travel 50 miles to the local town to see if someone wants to take it. Put the damn thing on Craigslist and rehome it. You don't have to kill it. And you don't have to kill the goat. Goats, I hear, make great pets. Give it to a little girl who wants a smelly goat.
Or eat it.
You can eat. I make a great Greek goat stew. I'll give you the recipe. But
Paul,
but
Alicia, okay, people, for all you who are listening with unruly goats, please contact Alicia and she will take your goat and eat it. You don't have to kill it yourself. She will eat it. She'll turn it into stew. You've heard it here.
Look, very delicious. I think we could do our own ad. Are you trying to impress Von Schitzenpants? Are you lacking the strength to pull down Palestinian posters? Try Alicia's Fancy Goat Stew, brought to you by Christy Noam. All right. See, I just went real meta.
I connected all the threads. Well done.
I'm going to pat myself.
I think you should post Alicia's recipe for goat stew along with this show. When we post the show, the goat stew has also got to be there.
Hey, by the way, to our listeners, if you're thinking to yourself right now, wow, these people sound like they're all high. This is really going off the rails fast. I would like to go to our closing segment here, where we're going to actually talk about the fact that, yes, everyone is high. First of all, in my neck of the woods, I count no further, no fewer than 14 cannabis dispensaries within a 10-mile radius of my home. I would say that's too many. How much pot do people need? Apparently, President Joe Biden, Catholic, kind of conservative culturally, not really with the times, would like to appeal to the youth vote a little bit more. And he has moved marijuana down from schedule one to, you guys were telling me, Schedule three also includes things like Tylenol, aggressive back rubs, looking at people a little strangely, and other various misdemeanor kinds of abuses of the body. Not a BFD, but Paul, this, you must be
for
thrilled.
Clarity, it's not moved yet. It's moving. It's not
it's moving.
Moving.
It's moving. It's moving.
There's a complicated process for this to happen, but what it means is it will be reclassified as available for medical research and for medical uses. It doesn't reclassify it as available for recreational uses, and theoretically, it's still prosecutable as a federal offense, although nobody's been prosecuted for possession of marijuana in a really long time. And yes, all over New England, there are cannabis dispensaries which are somehow being able to evade federal law. And by the way, if you derive THC from hemp, you can order online because there's a loophole, and that'll get you mildly stoned too. So for all of us who
this is a real how-to guide for the younger people out there.
For all of us who were kids in the 60s and have waited 50 years for some movement from the federal government on what is a legitimate source of important medical information, therapeutic information, this could not be more welcome news. And I applaud President Joe Biden, who probably sat around with Barack in the Oval Office when nobody
Stoning.
Was in. Close the doors, man. Here, this.
Oh, dude. Barack, this is really cool.
I mean, who knows what went down in the Oval Office after hours with Joe and Barack. But I digress. Schedule three is a lot better than Schedule one, where it was classified as like a dangerous drug along with heroin. We are slowly moving. Maybe in another 100 years, we'll move to true sanity in the treatment of marijuana.
I would like to say something I do not often say. I may have never said it in the past. I may never say it in the future. But thank you to the Biden administration, because full disclosure, I am a lobbyist who is working on legalization of marijuana in New Hampshire. We were within 2 weeks of the vote, and some of our holdouts are simply because it's a Schedule One drug on the federal level. So thank you, sir. It's job security. I appreciate it. I don't use the stuff, but happy to have it legal in New Hampshire.
I would just like to say that once again, the Simpsons predicted the future. Actually, there's nothing that's happened that the Simpsons hasn't predicted. And in this case, there was an episode back in the year 2000, 24 years ago, that looked forward to the future. And it was about this time frame. It wasn't exactly this year, but it was about this time frame. And Lisa Simpson had become the first straight female president of the United States. That hasn't happened yet. But at the end of the episode, Bart asks her as a thank you for helping her out to just legalize it. And look, here we are. Joe Biden is basically Lisa Simpson, and he's basically legalizing it. Oh my gosh, what a world. We have got to get out of here. On that weird note, I'm Matt for Paul and Alicia. We will see you next time.